In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. For today's chit-chat, I'll be speaking with Jeff Palmer, who we know in the Underground Garage as a member of the Portsmouth, New Hampshire band The Connection. These days, however, Jeff is active in the lineup of the Kurt Baker Band playing guitar. Kurt's latest album, Rock and Roll Club, is out now and available from Wicked Cool Records. It features our recent coolest song in the world, Hitting Rock Bottom, and we'll hear a bit of that now, followed by my interview with Jeff on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. It's the Mighty Manfred here with you in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and time for our coolest conversations. My guest is Jeff Palmer, who first came to our attention in the Underground Garage as part of the band The Connection. Since then, he's gone solo, and more recently, he's been working with Kurt Baker, and is playing with Kurt on Kurt's new album, Rock and Roll Club, which features this week's coolest song in the world, Hitting Rock Bottom. How are you, Jeff?
Hey, hey, Mr. Manfred, how are you? Great to be on the phone chat with you again.
Absolutely, man. Good to hear from you. I was looking back when we had spoken most recently. I know one time for sure in 2015, and that seems like a million years ago now. Is that spot to you? 2015?
That sadly does sound right. I don't want to age either of us more than nature already does.
But oh, no, Jeff. The spirit is timeless.
Yeah. If only my body would feel the same way.
I got you. Well, I went over those old questions and I realized that I had never asked you where you were from originally. So is that Portsmouth, New Hampshire? Is that where you were from originally?
Yes, I was born in Melrose, Massachusetts. I lived there for a couple years, but then Portsmouth, New Hampshire from probably the age of about 6 on up until last year. Portsmouth and Rochester, a few towns right around that area, but Portsmouth, New Hampshire was the rock and roll capital of the world for a little bit.
Well, man, in fact, this is interesting because you played in the Queers around the time you got out of high school, and those guys, they started like about 1981.
Yeah,
so you were like a year old when they formed.
That's
so
true.
What was it like to play with punk rock dads?
You know, it was a great learning experience. I loved that band. I think Joe King is a fantastic songwriter and lyricist and just has such a knack for writing a great pop hook. And I was hooked on, you know, his band and the Lookout Records Error bands all around that time. And yeah, just I knew him from around town. He needed a bass player, and it was great. The amount of people I got to meet and how much traveling and touring I did. He was very professional. So I got to immediately see the kind of inside workings of, you know, a larger scale independent band.
And so you mentioned you play bass, you knew him from around town. How exactly did you land the gig? Was there an audition of any sort?
No, not really. It's a funny story. I was at a place called the Elvis Room. Joe was there. I was just asking him, you know, when's the next record coming out or when you playing again? And he's like, well, actually, I need a bass player. Why, do you play? And I was like, well, I'm a guitar player, but I would love to play bass for you. And then he asked for my number. I thought he was just being nice or whatever. And about like a week and a half later, I got home from work. I was super young and still living with my dad. And my dad's like, some guy named Joe Queer called you. And I'm like, yeah, right. Ha ha. And he's like, no, yeah, this is his number. So it was back in the phone book times. Remember phone books? So I looked up the phone number and it was the landline to his mom's house. So I called it. And then like a week later, we were in the studio recording. So, wow.
I hope you're still on good terms with those guys, with him.
I am. I was actually down in Atlanta, your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
A little while ago, and went over to Joe's house and said hi. I hadn't seen him in a few years, but I went over and I checked out his studio and actually did a little tracking for somebody else's project. My buddy Brad Marino. I did some bass for his record over at Joe's place. So.
Oh, cool. So, and Joe lives in Atlanta?
He's outside of Atlanta now, Mariettaville.
Marietta's yep. north of Atlanta. It's, you know, it's like kind of that way. It's kind of like Los Angeles. It's just Atlanta's very spread out.
Yeah, of course.
Natural boundaries, right? So it just kind of spreads out. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I had no idea. Well, so obviously you have had an affinity for punk rock. What was it like growing up in Portsmouth for you musically then? I mean, you mentioned your dad. I mean, was there much music in the home? Did your parents play records or play the radio?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My dad, when he was young, he loved doo-wop, and he used to sing bass in some little, like, you know, doo-wop kind of group. And we just always had records around. He loved the Beach Boys and, you know, anything like that. Just, you know, stacks of wax and old 45s. And that's kind of where I got into it. And then Portsmouth was great. It was much more, it was a seedy little town at the time, seaport town, loaded with, you know, fishermen. And there was one club, a punk rock club called the Elvis Room, which I mentioned before.
Yeah.
And between Joe King and then Al Barr, who's now the singer for the Dropkick Murphys, they are both from Portsmouth. They would get so many bands that they were friends with and label mates with into town. So I was just always seeing punk shows and rock and roll shows, garage rock, punk, any kind of show I could go to, just live music. I got hooked.
Well, you know, when I'm talking with the older rock guys, they all, and I mean, every single one of these dudes, they point to seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan as being this moment, you know, epiphany where they knew they had to rock. So do you have any one defining moment where the die was cast, like you saw a particular artist or you heard a particular song or something that a single point or not?
Yeah, so it would be for me, like the time it came out in my age would be Green Day when Dookie came out. Mm-hmm. And seeing the Basket Case video on TV. I had already kind of loosely been into punk and knew a little bit, but that was just, I think, for me and a lot of people in even like the garage rock scene, and I know for like Kurt and Wyatt and everybody that, you know, is in the Kurt Baker band, that's our Beatles. Obviously we're huge Beatles fans as well, and I'm not saying that they're in any way the Beatles, but that was, I think, you know, the defining moment where it was like, oh wow, This is it. My life just took a whole different path.
Well, you mentioned, you know, when he asked you if, do you play bass? He said, no, I play guitar. Well, yeah. When did you start playing guitar?
I started playing guitar, I think I was about 12. My dad got me, he knew that, you know, we would always listen to music. I hadn't asked for one or really thought about it. I just liked music. And then I came home and there was a guitar. And then he hooked me up with lessons for about 6 months. And that was it.
Why did he get you a guitar?
I'm not really sure. I think it was just he thought it would be neat. I think he had probably maybe wanted to play when he was a kid and never did, and just appreciated, mm-hmm. you know, music, and just thought it would be maybe a good bonding thing. Like if I started learning, he, you know, we could kind of like play little songs around the house or something.
Yeah. So,
yeah, that's. I haven't asked him exactly what the catalyst for getting it was. It probably could have also been I was, you know, starting to get a little older. So maybe if I had something to focus my time and energy on, I'd be less likely to get into trouble. But little did he know, the world of the kind of music and clubs we hang out with can lead you down troubling roads as well. So
we mentioned working on a project, I guess, in Atlanta for Brad Marino, and you and he formed Connection, and you put out as a Connection, did you put out like 5 or 6 albums?
You know, I'd have to look, but it's 4 official like studio records, then there's kind of a collection album and a covers record. And yeah, we were just, you know, and we love writing and playing and hanging out, so we were just, that's what we did, you know, you just blasted out. And I really like a release a year. Anytime I'm doing stuff in a band or for myself, it just, I don't know, it's that driving force of being like, okay, new year, what are we going to focus on? You know, what are we doing?
Well, on the band's Connections Facebook page, it mentions, you know, solo releases from both of you guys.
Yeah.
But the band itself, the Connection, is that like on a hiatus or is it finished?
Yeah, it's like, I guess, permanent hiatus slash finished. I'm not opposed to it. And I don't think Brad is either about, you know, doing a show or a new record. We've both just, I live in Wisconsin now. We kind of had stopped playing when Brad had his first child, but he's back into playing and stuff now. So yeah, there's no animosity or issues. We still chat all the time and play on each other's records and love all the same stuff. So we'd do something in the future if there was a cool offer or if we were just hanging around, you know, I don't see why not. But it's not anything that we're, you know, either of us are actively looking to do.
Well, you mentioned trying to get a release a year or even a solo thing. And I saw that you had a really solo release last year, Standing in the Spotlight. Does that happen? Does Kurt play on that?
Yep. Kurt's on that. Brad's on that. Chris Rogers is on that. Zach Sprague, who plays drums with Kurt Baker and myself and played in The Connection, he's on that. Most of the stuff any of us do is very just whose name are we going to slap on this one? But it's all the same team of rad, talented musicians, you know?
Well, it's funny you mentioned Chris. I know he's also on the new the Rock and Roll Club album, the new Kurt Baker album too. So you guys, quite the little rock and roll mafia up there in the Northeast, huh?
Yeah, that's what Steven kind of started calling us, at the, you know, New England mafia. And it's kind of, yeah, because I mean, like Chris Rogers, Wyatt Funderburk, Kurt Baker, and myself, we've been the Kurt Baker band for well over 10 years now, and we all play on each other's stuff. And then obviously those guys, you know and have been involved in The Connection, like Wyatt mixed and one of the Connection records. And yeah, we're just, I don't know, we all just love music and we all get along and appreciate each other's talents. Everyone, you know, has a different strength and brings it all to the table. And then we just, you know, love hanging out on top of it, so that it's not like an issue. It's something we all look forward to doing kind of any of our projects, I feel.
Well, so two things here. I want to ask about how you actually first met Kurt, but since we just mentioned Chris, how do you know Chris?
I know Chris through music from being up in Portland, Maine, and hanging out with Kurt. And, you know, Kurt would always put something together to do little shows, and he started playing with this one other guy, and that guy had been in a band with Chris. And, you know, Kurt immediately saw Chris's, you know, massive talent with playing, you know, piano, synth, anything like that, and vocal ability. So I, you know, Kurt was kind of like, I don't know what this other guy we're playing with is all about, but I think, you know, I'm taking Chris. So him and Chris just, and they hit it off too. Then I met Chris through him, and Chris started immediately playing on Connection Records and anything. Cause you know what it's like. Not everybody can be in a band just because somebody's talented or good doesn't mean you enjoy being around them or that it's right. worth their personality to play with. And when you find somebody like Chris that's just insanely easy and awesome to hang out with and has this, you know, massive talent and you like the same kind of music, it's just kind of a no-brainer. You do whatever you can to be together and make it work.
Absolutely. And anybody that's not aware what we're talking about Chris Rogers, and he's also an artist on Wicked Cool Records, Chris Rogers and the Dirty Gems. So with Kurt Baker, now he was in Spain for quite a while before the pandemic. It ended. He comes back to the States. You guys decide to start playing together. But when did you and Kurt actually first cross paths?
Oh, man. Oh, it was so, so long ago. My punk band was called The Guts, and Kurt had a punk band called The Leftovers. I say punk. We like punk, but it was definitely more on the poppy side of punk, and both of us are also influenced by, you know, heavily by good 60s pop and songwriters and everything. But he lived in Portland, Maine. I was in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. It's about 45 minutes away, and you know, it was a tight community and scene, so of course our bands would play shows together, and we hit it off and respected each other's, you know, abilities and kept in touch. Then when The Leftovers kind of disbanded, I started just playing with Kurt because he didn't want to stop playing music, and he still had, you know, records out and a ton of songs he wanted to work on, and I was like, of course I'll play with you, man. So then we just, you know, bonded and became even closer. He's one of my best buds. So
you guys were recording. Oh, first of all, I want to say, if you guys were on a bill together, it'd be Leftover Guts. That would be pretty cool.
That's right.
That'd be pretty cool. Well, yeah. You played with Kurt. I know you had a project called The New Trucaderos.
Sure.
Some singles, EPs, at least one album. You know, when he was in Spain, though, he had the Kurt Baker Combo. A great, great band over there. And I know the pandemic brings him back. Was he, you guys already in touch about when he would come back stateside and you would start playing together again?
Yeah. Like none of us lost touch. Cause Wyatt, Fingers, AKA Chris Rogers, myself and Kurt, we've done all the Kurt Baker band records. So like, you know, Brand New Beat, Play It Cool, After Party, and now this new one. So, and we had never lost touch even when he was over in Spain. We'd all like chat all the time and
yeah,
projects together. So then when he was coming back over here, it was just kind of a no-brainer. Like, you know, Kurt likes to always be active and do records too. So he's back here. And I think also like people love the combo. I personally love the combo as well, but a lot of people, I guess, were asking, really appreciate the more polished sound of the Kurt Baker band, which comes from the production and songwriting team with Wyatt Funderburk, who's just a massive talent for writing, production, arrangements. His vocal ability is out of this world. So that adds this whole other element, which I feel Kurt was hearing that people wanted to hear too. So that sort of, I think, led to it. Then we did, you know, After Party, and it's been just go, go, go since.
Well, let's talk some about the new album, Rock and Roll Club. Well, when did you guys record that?
So we started recording that like well over a year ago. It was because it was still like end of pandemic-ish times. We started it down at, you know, Little Steven's studio there, right at the underground garage headquarters.
The offices there. So that was Jeff Senoff you were working with?
Yep. We went down there. We did drums, guitars, and bass down there. So I got to use some of Steven's amps and a guitar. And Chris used, you know, of course, a bunch of the keyboards and stuff right there. And it was awesome working with Jeff and just being in that room. So thank you, Steven, for that opportunity. Then the tapes went to Nashville, and we went to Wyatt's studio and did some stuff. Then I have a studio that I had set up in my new house here in Madison, Wisconsin. So then Kurt and Wyatt came out here. We did a bunch more guitars and all the lead vocals right here in the room I'm sitting in. So,
wow, magic in that room right there, buddy.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, so many cool songs on the radio that I sit at the desk working, and Underground Garage is on, and a song comes on, and I'm like, oh, damn, that's pretty cool. That was recorded right here. But of course, Wyatt brought some of his gear, and we teamed up with gear, and we all kind of dork out on recording stuff and just get to hang out and work on stuff. It's just so much fun.
Well, our coolest song in the world this week is Hitting Rock Bottom. It's the album's opening cut. My notes say, and these liner notes, I never know if they're right or not, so I have to ask. So they say it was written by Kurt and a couple of Marks, like a Mark Moscato and a Mark O'Flaherty. Marks? Who are these Marks?
So Mark O'Flaherty is a fantastic guy. Both he knows Kurt better now because he's from Canada, but he was living in Spain. So they had teamed up, but both Kurt and I had met Mark years previous in our punk bands. He was in a cool punk band from Canada called Chicks Dig It.
I remember them. Yeah.
Yeah. They were Chicks on Sub Pop for a little while. Then they did some records with Fat Records, or Fat Subsidiary, something like that. Just awesome, super catchy, fun punk stuff. But then he left the band and moved to Spain. So Kurt and him did a couple different projects. They had a band called The Gold, and Mark would fill in on the combo on different tours and stuff like that. And they're just like any of us. Mark fits right in with the group. He loves just kicking back and having fun and just writing songs.
Ask then, did this song date from that project that he and Kurt had over there in Spain, or is it a newer composition?
Yeah, no, it dated from demo sessions around that time. I don't think this song ever went into production in any of the projects. I'd have to clarify that with Kurt, but I don't believe it did. They just had a good demo. And then it's such an awesome song. It's, I guess not even loosely, but it's about Ace Frehley from Kiss. So, of course, we're all big Kiss fans. So we're like, oh, dude, let's do this one, Kurt. This is just a great song.
Well, our producer here, Sammy Semenza, is a big Kiss fan as well.
Oh, Sammy, you fit right in, buddy.
That's awesome.
It's not my story to tell, but Mark, who helped write the song, has some inside stories. He was loosely dating a girl that had been dating Ace for a long time. And then I think that's the nebulous of where this song came from.
Wow.
Yeah.
Curiouser and curiouser.
Yeah.
So, there's several songs that we've already been playing off the album the past several months, including the title track, Rock and Roll Club, She Don't Want to Be Alone, the single Anchors Up. But one we haven't played so far that I'd like to share some love for is a tune called In Love Alone.
Very cool.
Yeah. Well, it seems like somebody's playing an acoustic guitar on there. Or someone's playing a harmonica. Who is playing the acoustic?
I do we all kind of do all kinds of stuff. I do the harmonica and the acoustic. Kurt might have done an acoustic track. I don't know. Like I'd have to go back and really listen and start to work stuff down, because we'll do a pass of all kinds of stuff and love it, and then edit down what we want, then go back and do another whole pass of all new instruments. And then by the time it's done, it's like, wait, which track to keep, who did it? But that one, I do believe Kurt, Wyatt, and I sat around with acoustic guitars and one mic and did some passes of all playing to kind of get that Traveling Wilburys sound for the acoustics.
So who came up with the initial idea for In Love Alone?
For In Love Alone, most of the songs initially, Kurt is just a machine for writing, right? And just has a bulk of demos, and kind of Wyatt will kind of go through it and then take off on an idea for a song. Or he'll have a nugget that's gold and Kurt will kind of run with it. And then I help a lot with the lyrics and different stuff on whatever songs Kurt wants help with. So this one was that one, the bridge. I think I took off and did a lot of work on the bridge for this one and stuff.
So I was going to ask you, in fact, did you contribute any songwriting ideas to the, you know, the album's 12 tunes? So you did to In Love Alone. Can you, what are some other songs that you contributed some parts to?
Anchors Up, Kurt and I wrote that one. Bright Blue Sky is Kurt, myself, and then Zach Sprague, who doesn't play drums on this record. Craig Sala plays drums on this, but Zach plays and has played on other Kurt Baker records and plays with us all the time. And he's a fantastic lyricist. So he helped with Bright Blue Sky as well. So,
yeah, well, tell me about Bright Blue Sky some more, because that one's kind of got a heavy vibe to it.
Yeah, man. So that came from Kurt was at my house and Zach was there, and we were just like we do, hanging out and just chilling. And we had been kind of talking about Tom Petty, and Kurt had been kind of deep into some heavier Tom Petty vibe music. And he was just kind of like playing this sort of riff, and it sounded pretty badass. And then I just grabbed the electric and came up with, just naturally kind of came out that kind of like hook, well, na 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 na, for the guitar. And then we just started spitballing lyrics. Then that's when Zach came down and just kind of hit it out of the park. The intro lyric for that song was originally hidden in like the second verse or something, and I was like, oh, that should be the opener line. Like, she drinks her coffee like a tourist. It just, to me, that was like, oh, this is going to be interesting. But that's a Zach lyric.
Well, the album ends with It Was You, and that's got strings on it. I can't recall of any other Kurt Baker tune with strings. And is there one? Am I forgetting one? Or is this the first tune with strings?
You know, I think it's, you know, Kurt's just done so good for Wicked Cool that Steven finally gave him the budget to get a string quartet in there.
Oh, whoa. So who arranged the strings?
Wyatt Funderburk.
Okay, well, that was going to be my guess if I had to.
Yep. Yeah, anything that's, you know, this amazing polish and music writing like that is going to be most likely Wyatt on the production end of things. And Chris is fantastic like that, you know, as well, and a Berkeley graduate. So those two know how to do all that stuff.
So who wrote the song? Whose composition is that?
That's Kurt's. And it, I think, Kurt's. Why I have to go back and look. Wyatt probably has a co-writing credit on that one.
Yeah.
I don't think I do. I think my girlfriend was trying to tell Kurt to change some of the lyrics or something. I don't know if they made the cut or not on that. I should have reread the liner notes to, I always forget who internally who wrote what, and it's because it's not something I focus on, or I don't think any of us do. We're not like, use the song because I wrote it. It's just like whatever's the best that just people are going to like, that we all like, you know? So I'm never concerned about whether my cut made it or not or anything, but it is cool when you do know. Like, I clearly remember writing like Anchors Up, doing my parts for that and stuff. So I'm proud of that one. But other than that, at the end of the day, I don't hold one song as closer to my heart because I wrote it. You know, a good song is a good song, and I'm happy to.
Right.
But I also love
it. I'm with you on that. With you on that.
Yeah.
Well, so today's Friday, October the 6th. I saw online that you guys are scheduled to play this Mom's Basement Fest in Youngstown, Ohio, at the Westside Bowl. At least that's what I saw online. Is that right? That's
correct. Yeah, we're here for the weekend. We're playing Friday and Saturday, doing some my solo stuff, but we're going to, of course, slip in some Kurt Baker songs because we can push the new record. And then Kurt's going to play an acoustic set at lunch for everybody on tomorrow. But yeah, we're excited. It's a cool kind of like pop, rock, punk kind of festival. It's like 16 bands, 2 days, stage downstairs and stage upstairs. Yeah, it brings a bunch of people to Youngstown, Ohio.
Got a reason to go there now, for sure.
That's right.
And what other tour dates do you guys have upcoming? Like later on, like in October, you're headed overseas? Where you're headed to Japan?
To Japan, you're right. That's going to be amazing. We're super psyched. We'll be there at the end of October. So we're doing a big Halloween ball over there. And then five other shows. The Halloween one's going to be with Nikki Corvette, which is...
Oh, that's way cool. So have you guys... Well, has Kurt ever played in Japan? Have you ever played in Japan?
Both of us have, not together. Kurt's been over there with the combo. I was over there with the Queers, and Wyatt has played over there. He was playing bass in a band called the Parasites, who are kind of a pop punky band from back in the day. So this will be the first time that we've all been there together. And
it's wow, very cool. So when I've played in Japan, it's so way cool. Just, you know, my favorite countries, in fact, are Japan and Spain to play in, because both the rock and roll culture in both countries. And with Japan, typically it was like, you know, show might go from like, let's say 7:30 to 9:30 or 7:30 to 10, you know, and they would cram in all these bands playing 15 or 20 minute sets. And then the headliner would play maybe 30 minutes. And that was considered, you know, more than 30 minutes. Nobody wants to see that.
Right. And,
but then, so that would be the show. So the show maybe lasts 2.5 hours, the actual, you know, performing time. And then we would go, it was time for after show party. And most of the time we would go to a restaurant. And so the other bands that played, or the promoter, whoever was involved in the production, sound guys, whatever, would come to the after show party. And that would last at least as long as a show, and sometimes almost twice as long, you know, you'd be 4 or 5 hours.
Amazing.
And those glasses that you're drinking out of, they're teeny weeny little glasses. And, you know, the whole culture is to fill up the you're not allowed to fill up your own glass.
Oh,
so it's very hard to keep track of how much you've had until you have to stop and go to the bathroom, and then you know you've had too much.
That's awesome. And then you go to the bathroom and come back for more.
So look, the other tune off of Kurt's new album Rock and Roll Club that I want us to check out now is called Misconnection.
Yep.
I'm going to call it a classic Kurt Baker sound to that one.
Agreed.
Do you recall when that one came together?
That one came together, I believe, with a lyric that Kurt had and Wyatt sketched out the music, or Wyatt had the little line, the Misconnection line, and then they put it together. But yeah, that's a Kurt and Wyatt track. I totally feel the same, that it has that classic kind of Kurt Baker band sound. I feel like it really could have fit on the album Play It Cool, which came out 2 records ago.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. I love that song.
Yeah, me too. Well, Jeff, thanks so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Yeah, man. And I, if I don't see you before, I will. You're going to be in Wisconsin there October 13th in Green Bay at the UFO Museum.
That's right.
Yeah, man. So I'll be up there. It's an easy drive for me, and I love you guys. So I'm excited to see you.
Well, you have to let me know, and I'll certainly put you on the guest list. You have to communicate with me ahead of time.
No, I'll reach out. I'm also always happy to support music and the guy putting on the show, Time Bomb Tom.
Tom Smith, right?
Yep, I love Tom. He set so many of my bands up with shows in Green Bay over the years. So I'm always happy to support a show he's doing.
Oh, yeah. He's a great man. Great, great man.
Yep. The Concert Cafe was the big club we all played in Green Bay.
That's so, right.
Yeah. But you'll be at the UFO Museum. So
that's right. And record store.
Yes. Don't want people to confuse. It's not actually a UFO museum. It's just a good hooky name.
when I've put the listing up online, I've had friends like, oh, UFO museum. That sounds really cool. Like,
yeah. Of course.
And I just tell them, absolutely, you have to buy a ticket, fly into Green Bay.
Awesome.
Well, we will go out now with Misconnection off Kurt Baker's latest album, Rock and Roll Club. It's Kurt, the Kurt Baker Band, with Jeff Palmer and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Misconnection, affection, perfection. Misconnection, obsession, rejection. I was drinking, overthinking, same seat, same bar every weekend. Then she flew in, a total shoo-in. Ask the DJ if they had.
That was a portion of Missed Connection from the Kurt Baker Band here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's Jeff Palmer for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Now, Graham Day, he's from the UK's Medway. He's an artist we follow here in the Underground Garage. He's fronted groups like the Solar Flares, the Forefathers, and Graham Day and the Jailers. And the past couple of years, you can add the Woggles to that list. My band, the Woggles, he's been playing with and recording with. And we'll find out next time around exactly what possessed him to do such a crazy thing. That's Graham Day on our next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.